there's two sides.
Repeal.
Good morning. We'll call into session the House Committee on Higher Education Innovation and Workforce Development for Monday, May 4th, 2015. As I say, may the 4th be with you. This morning, we're going to have work sessions first on Senate Bill 219 and Senate Bill 240. Public hearing and work session possibly on Senate Bill 686 with a dash A, and possibly a public hearing on Senate Bill 759 dash A. I think if Senator Gelser comes in, we might accommodate her presence. But in any case,
she was walking down the hall.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She might be right outside.
Maybe we'll...
No, go ahead and open a work session.
All right. Open a work session on Senate Bill 219 and Senate Bill 240.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move Senate Bill 219 to the floor, but do pass recommendation.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Do you want to?
I need to read it first.
Yeah, let's.
Senate Bill 219 directs appropriations for public universities and Oregon Health Sciences University to a Higher Education Coordinating Commission rather than Department of Administrative Services, requires a majority approval of HEC members for official action, declares emergency, and is effective on passage. There is a fiscal statement issued, although it's, the fiscal statement was actually just clarifying that there is a $0 net fiscal impact. It is just changing the flow of monies from one place to another, and no revenue impact.
So is there any discussion on this? Seeing none, so we'll call for a vote.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Raymond?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gallegos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Reed?
Excused.
Do we have a unanimous support for this bill? So let's see, do we need a carrier?
Yes.
Is anybody interested in carrying this?
I'll carry it.
All right. Representative Williams will carry it. So we'll close the session on 219 and open a work session on Senate Bill 240. We have a motion to...
Do you want me to read it first?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 240 authorizes the State Apprenticeship and Training Council to make exceptions to apprentice wage schedule, journey worker hourly wage rate, or minimum ratio of journey workers to apprentices to accommodate Oregon Youth Authority training programs and apprenticeship, declares an emergency, effective on passage, no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, no statement.
Any discussion on this bill? No?
Mr. Chair. Motion first.
I'm sorry, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 240 to the floor, but do pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any discussion? None. We'll call for a vote.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Nearman?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gallegos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Reed?
Excused. The motion passes, and we need a carrier as well for this one. Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Okay. We need again this work session on 240 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 686A, and we'll gavel it in.
The senator's back here.
Let's see. Is Karen, is it Huffelbaugh with the Employment Department?
Want me to go ahead and introduce him?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 686A permits individual enrolled in alternative education program to be considered out-of-school youth for purposes of Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Mm-hmm. Victoria, you saw the senators.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Gallegos, Senator. Vice Chair Wisnett. My name is Karen Hummelbaugh. For the record, I am the Workforce Deputy for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And just wanted to talk to you very briefly about the intent of this bill is really just to allow maximum flexibility when we are finding youth eligible for federal workforce in Innovation and Opportunity Act programs. We call that WIOA. The WIOA is the first federal reform in the public workforce system federally in 15 years, and it is the way that we receive funds from the federal government for adults, dislocated workers, and a majority of our youth funding for Oregon's public workforce system.
Ooh. You have to introduce yourself. I'm sorry.
I think she did.
You did?
Okay, never mind.
She did.
My mistake.
No problem. Under the new legislation, there's an emphasis both for expenditures and for eligibility that the youth in these programs shift from what we have traditionally done for in-school youth to out-of-school youth. And so we now need to be serving more of our folks in experiential learning and out-of-school youth opportunities for dropouts. And as you know, in Oregon, our local workforce investment boards and their partners do an excellent job providing alternative routes for young people to complete high school. But we want to make sure that our definition here in Oregon is that we have our definition in Oregon that supports these programs. Senator Dimbrough serves on the State Workforce Investment Board, and he understood the importance of sort of getting ahead and being proactive of the federal rule writing process and making sure that the intent in Oregon is to allow for maximum flexibility for our local programs to serve our youth. So I just want to finally say that this definition only applies to these WIOA-funded programs, and it doesn't affect any funding or eligibility requirements for regular K through 12 programs.
Any questions? None. Sounds good.
Did a good job.
Can I ask
you
one?
Well,
you
have one.
So I'm not really clear. What's the problem now? Is you probably said it, but the can you explain what the problem is now?
Yeah. Our Vice Chair Gallegos, members of the committee, Representative Nierman. Really, we're just trying to make sure that our definition of out-of-school youth for these federal programs is as broad as possible, because when we talk about in and out of school, we want to be able to put these students into alternative school programs, and that would technically be in school by, you know, K through 12 definitions in Oregon. But for these federal programs, we want to say that those alternative schools are an alternative route and call them out of school for these federal programs, basically. We just want to keep the definition as broad as possible so that the day that they're the dropout and we put them into the alternative program that we're able to go ahead and use our dollars for that.
Can I follow?
Sure.
What's an example of a out-of-school program that you have?
Vice Chair Gallegos, members of the committee, Representative Nierman.
Okay.
Out-of-school programs, alternative schools, I'm trying to think, Portland area has many of them.
Except for Seeds.
Springwater Trail.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Everybody name your favorite. I was trying to think of one in your district, actually. The HALO program in your district is probably a good example of something that would probably be under this new definition.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So we, if there are any further questions, and if we feel comfortable, we can open a work session on 686. Well, I should close the hearing first and then open a work session on Senate Bill 686A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 686A to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. It's been moved that we adopt Senate Bill 686. Is there any discussion? All right, then we'll call for a vote.
Representative McEwen?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gallegos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Mann?
Excuse. The motion passes.
And we need a carrier.
We need a carrier? Ah, we've got two carriers.
Oh, what an arm wrestle.
It's pretty controversial, but I'd like to carry it anyway.
All right.
He always does a heavy lifting.
All right. Representative Reardon will carry. And so now, Boy, we're going, we're all very amenable for Monday morning.
We're trying to get into a committee on Friday.
All right. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 7598. And Representative Gelser and Representative Gallegos, and Senator, excuse me, and Representative Gallegos. I'll sit up here. I don't know, do I need to pass the gavel over if I'm going to?
Yeah, I think you have to.
All right. Well,
I think it's constitutional.
You have to introduce yourself, because we don't know who you are.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning. Happy Monday. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which includes Albany and Corvallis, Philomath, Millersburg, Tangent, and surrounding areas. I'm pleased to be here today to talk to you a little bit about Senate Bill 759, which passed easily through the Senate. This is part of a package of bills addressing campus sexual assault. You passed the other bill off your floor with a very broad margin just last week. So the bill that you passed before had to do with certified sexual assault advocates and being able to hold information that a survivor of sexual assault provides in privilege. This bill has to do with what happens when a student reports to their campus that they have been the victim of a sexual assault. And it really does two very simple things. One, it says that the campus has to have a protocol. They have to have a plan of how they're going to respond when they have a student that has been assaulted. And the second thing the bill says is that as part of that plan, they have to provide some written notice that does some very specific things. And that is the bulk of the bill. That's what's laid out in the bill. First, it has to let the student know what their rights are after they have been assaulted. And part of that has to include information about what the student's legal options are. We've heard far too many stories about students that have not fully understood the difference between a criminal justice process and a campus disciplinary process and how those might play off against one another. The bill also needs to talk about how they might pursue a campus disciplinary-based process. The bill needs to talk about any campus-based services that are available to the student in terms of counseling or advocacy, and provide information about community-based nonprofit resources that might be available to that person. For example, a community rape and domestic violence center, and they would enter those services in the same way anybody else would in the community, but this notice will make that information easily available to them. And then this part is new. There has to be information about the student's privacy rights, including but not limited to information about the limitations of privacy that may exist if the student visits a campus health or counseling center. The reason that we added this provision to the bill, you may be aware of some issues that are taking place at the University of Oregon, where a student's what she believed to be confidential counseling records were then used against her when the university decided to sue her after she had been of a sexual assault, which is, that in itself is a discussion for another day and an important conversation. The bill, as I said before, needs to provide that information about the community resources. Finally, the bill has to be written in plain language. It can't be a tiny font and a very strange color. It needs to be really easy to read, and it needs to be very, very easy to understand. So this bill is very important for a student to be able to take control of the situation after they have been a victim of sexual assault. This is part of the process of becoming a survivor of that sexual assault, being able to decide how you want to pursue justice after that's been done, being able to decide when you want to take the next steps that are necessary, and being able to control the information that's important to you. I want to make very clear two things about the privacy issues. One, the bill that we've passed, the privilege bill, that doesn't apply broadly to campus sexual assault or campus counseling centers or health centers. That privilege belongs to someone that's called a certified sexual assault advocate. So there might not be any such person at a campus health center or a campus counseling center. This idea that when you go and you see a counselor, that is privileged that that is confidential is absolutely essential. This bill was not broad enough to tackle that bigger issue head on, and I suspect that it's not just an issue at the University of Oregon. We've heard from the University of Oregon that they were allowed to do this because of FERPA. We know that our federal delegation is looking at that loophole, but we have the ability as a state to say that we expect that our students will enjoy privacy when they visit a counseling center on their campus. And we'll be bringing back legislation next session to do that, to make that the policy of the state, that wherever you go to seek counseling services, whether that's on campus or off campus, you should have the same basic expectation of privacy. And if we're going to address our chronic mental health issues in the state, if people are going to be able to safely seek services when they're experiencing anxiety or depression, suicidality, whether that's related to sexual assault or not, they need to know that that's private. All this bill does is, on that issue, is make sure that students know what risks they take today if they choose to visit a counseling center like the one at the University of Oregon. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for bringing this to us today. I'm just curious about the timing and the delivery of this information and when that might typically happen.
Chair Gallegos, Representative Reardon, that is to happen whenever a student reports a sexual assault. So a student goes and they make a report to somebody on campus that they have been the victim of a sexual assault. This notice must be provided to them as part of that protocol that that university establishes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, do we know where colleges and universities currently are? I'm guessing some have some sort of protocols in place, but others might not. I'm sure this is targeted towards trying to have a uniform response and stuff, but do we have any idea where? Maybe we'll have testimony from them, but I'm guessing some probably are in better shape or better prepared to offer this sort of assistance than others, do you think?
Chair Gallegos, Representative Johnson, we heard from the Title IX coordinator from Portland State University and the Senate Education Committee to talk about different initiatives that are taking place on different campuses. It's not necessarily uniform, and I do think that it's true that different campuses mm-hmm. are in different places. What we do know from students that have experienced sexual assault, whether in Oregon or elsewhere, we have a long way to go on our campuses in terms of having an adequate and appropriate response to these students, both in terms of getting them access to the support services that they need and giving them the tools that they need to pursue appropriate disciplinary or criminal justice processes. This is going to help us get there. And I failed to mention it. You know, it's a Monday morning. This really is a crisis on our campuses for young people. We're looking at 1 in 5 women on a college campus reporting being sexually assaulted while they're there. That number is far too high, and I hope that we can come back and do some more work. We'll be talking to Ways and Means about a budget note in terms of looking at where would that financial responsibility come from if we wanted to provide training on campuses about how to prevent sexual assault, how to reduce that number. And it's unclear at this point. Is that an education responsibility? Is that a public safety issue? I would argue this is a public safety issue that occurs on college campuses.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
We have some other folks that are going to testify. I'll call them. We've got four here. I don't know if we should just call them all four up or put it into two. Let's do two. Okay. Brenda Tracy and Ellie Malone, you want to come up? Welcome, and if you'll identify yourselves and provide your testimony.
Yeah, okay. Hi, I'm Brenda Tracy. Thank you for having me today. I'm a rape survivor. I was recently, last November, the Oregonian did a very lengthy story on me. In 1998, I went to an apartment in Corvallis with my best friend to see her boyfriend. While I was there, I was drugged and I was gang raped by 4 men. 2 of them were Oregon State University football players. After the attack, I went and I had a rape kit done. I reported to the police. I wanted the men held accountable. But shortly after I reported, there was a severe backlash that happened. Family, friends, the community, everyone pretty much turned against me immediately. And because I was so traumatized, I was suicidal after the attack. I received death threats against myself and my sons. I decided to not pursue the criminal process. So what I did is I went to the university. I went to Oregon State University. I reported what happened to me. They had the police report of the men essentially confessing and implicating each other as to what happened to me. And I trusted the counselor that I talked to. We talked about what type of disciplinary action would happen, and I trusted that they would follow through. I thought that they cared about what was happening, and I thought that they would be concerned that they had predators on their campus. But that didn't happen. My attackers were given a one-game football suspension. They were given 25 hours community service. They were put on conduct probation, and they had to take a class. Things for me were not that easy. I didn't get to do 25 hours community service and forget what happened. SB 759 on the surface kind of seems just like a piece of paper. But this piece of paper could have changed my life. I was not given any options. I was not told what my rights were. I was not protected. I was not supported. Thanks. I left the campus that day after reporting. No one followed up with me. And so I spent the next 16 years just trying to forget what happened to me. And when I could no longer forget it and I've had to face it, I decided to come forward and put my name and my face on my story, because what's happening on our campuses is wrong and it's an epidemic. 1 in 5 is a lot. There's only about 18 to 20% of women who are reporting their rape on campus, and there's very few prosecutions. There's very few suspensions for this crime. There's more students getting expelled for cheating than there is for rape. And to me, that's not okay. This bill not only provides information to survivors, but it gives them, it empowers them to know what their rights are. And when you're empowered, when you know what your rights are, you can follow up. You can hold people accountable. Family members can help support the victims to hold the university accountable. This bill that Senator Gelster put together for me is genius. This piece of paper not only empowers family, students, friends of what their rights are, tells them what access they have to resources, which I had none. It lets the university know that they're put on notice, that we know what our rights are, so they should probably follow through and do the right thing. I just see this bill as a response tool. I see it as a prevention tool. I see it as an empowerment tool. I see it as a deterrent tool. When people know that the university is going to hold them accountable, there may be men on campus that are not going to do this. If they know that it's going to be reported and they know that the university is going to follow through. People are getting away with this crime on campus, and they're going to continue to do it as long as we allow them to get away. And I would just, I know Senator Gelster talked about budgets and education, and I do this for free. I went to OSU last week for Take Back the Night, and I was the keynote speaker. We had 800 to 1,000 students show up for Take Back the Night. That's the largest they've ever had in 30 years. Last year they had 40. I'm going to U of O next week to speak to their campus. People on campus care about this issue, and we need to show them that our legislators and the state of Oregon care about them too, and I would urge you to pass this through. Thank you. If you have any questions for me, I would love to answer them.
Should we hear from a few first, and then we can have questions? Thanks.
Chair Reed, Vice Chairs Gallegos and Wisnett, my name is Al Malin, or members of the committee. My name is Al Malin. I'm a student at the University of Oregon. I'm going to read this because that will be easier. At the beginning of this fall term, I was sexually assaulted. I knew I couldn't talk to the person who I would normally to find out what resources were available and what my rights were because she works for the school and is a mandatory reporter. At the time, I was taking a full course load and working two jobs with the university. I was spending 12 plus hours a day on campus. My entire life was on campus, and after I was assaulted, there was no one I could talk to about my experience or find resources because I knew I couldn't go to the police. This meant that as I tried to balance self-care, a full course load, and two jobs, I had no resources to help me get through. I didn't know what my rights were, and I didn't know how to try to find out without having to talk to the police. I didn't know if there was a way I could get support from my supervisors or professors to make to help me take a little time for self-healing. I didn't know how to ask without forcing them to report. If I had a way to access anonymous reporting and had received my rights, what was already a horrible and traumatic time could have been made easier by knowing what rights and resources were for me, even if I couldn't go to the police. I didn't know where to reach out to resources, and I didn't know how to find out what my resources were, let alone which ones I could handle without having to go through the mandatory reporting process. Ultimately, due to the trauma of the event and the lack of resources available to me, I resigned from one of my jobs, knowing that without that income, I would need to find and take out private student loans, having already exhausted my financial aid. No future survivor of sexual assault should have to go through this. In a world after this bill, students at any college in Oregon would be able to have better access to resources and know their rights. This bill does not go far enough, and it's important to ensure that we pass proactive and preventative policies. If I had access to these things, I would have maybe been able to get through that term without failing classes and resigning from my job. University action alone is not enough. Campuses moving slowly, one at a time, is never going to solve this problem. We need statewide action that makes sure that colleges have a basic level of support for survivors of sexual assault. I urge you to support Senate Bill 759 so colleges and universities across the state can be a little safer for students. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Do you have any questions for our panelists?
Yes. I have a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for coming. I know Brenda has been an absolute warrior in this building on this issue, and I know how hard it is to get up and tell your story, and I have just been so happy to be part of a legislative session where we're finally taking this stuff seriously, and so thank you both.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gallegos. And to both of you, thanks also for your courage for stepping up to the plate. I kind of have this, it's kind of a little bit of a technical question of who do you report sexual assault to? Is there one channel, or is there a variety of possibilities, or I don't know the answer to that.
Well, they have designated people on campuses that you can report to. I don't know that in general students have really known. It's like it happens to you, and then you just kind of go, what do I do now? Where do I go? I know some women automatically maybe go to the Women's Health Center. I can't speak, but for you, I'm not sure if you knew exactly where to go.
I mean, a lot of people, we have sexual assault like hotlines on our campus to be like, I need resources. There's like a crisis line. There's a non-crisis line. A lot of people go there. The Office of the LGBT Education and Support Services Program, a lot of people go there. But ultimately, by Oregon law, everyone who works for the university, even like the people who cook the food, everyone in student government is a mandatory reporter. So like as you go to anyone who works for the university, they report up to a supervisor, and then up the ladder.
Which completely takes the control away from the student, which I think the important thing to know about rape is that it's about power and control. And when your power and control is completely stripped, and then you have to go to people and trust them to take care of you and help you, you may not get that. And it's even more traumatizing sometimes, the reporting process, than what's happened, and I've heard many, many students say that.
I think another thing, the university sort of recommends that you go to the Title IX coordinator or investigator, the university ombudsperson, the Women's Center, or the health center, I think, are like sort of the four like major places they want you to go to report. But ultimately, because of the mandatory reporting practices.
And that's where, for me, 759 is so important, because for me, the school prioritized the lives of the athletes over me. And that can still happen today. There's nothing to say that you will report on any campus right now and that will be handled correctly. There's no law in place that requires them to do the right thing. What happened to me can happen again, and has happened to other universities throughout the nation. So it's so important that we have this bill so that the students know exactly what their rights are. Friends, family, staff, everyone can track what the university is doing, because you may have an issue with an athlete or someone that they don't necessarily, you know, want to progress on right away. I mean, we saw it happen. We saw, you know, a reporting issue at University of Oregon just this last year. So this is vital to prevent what happened to me and other people from happening again.
Another question? Representative McEwen?
Yes. Vice Chair Gallegos, thank you. And thank you so much for being here. This is an incredibly important issue, and I applaud your courage in coming forward. This may be a question for Senator Gelser, I'm not sure, but I'll throw it out and see what happens. When I read the bill, it says, victims of sexual assault on the grounds or at the facilities of the university or college. So is there a geographic boundary here? What happens if it's in student housing that's off campus, or happens off campus but it's still students?
Chair Reed, Vice Chair Gallegos, Representative McEwen. So a dorm or a facility that's owned by the university would be a facility of the campus. We talked about this issue. We talked about this issue at length, trying to figure out how do you incorporate, because what happens if it's between two students at an apartment?
Exactly.
Our hope is that when a student goes and reports a sexual assault on campus, this protocol, this notice, is going to be given to them. Where we struggled was what happens if what's the appropriate responsibility to give to the university, and how do you define what that circle of responsibility is? Mm-hmm. So to start with, it made sense when it was within the facilities and grounds of the institution. I think the hope would be there would be nothing that would prevent, Brent, her situation, for instance, was not at a facility of campus.
It was off campus,
but it involved someone, and she wasn't a student of the university. But our hope would be if she went, she would receive that information, and as part of that protocol, we would expect that institutions are looking at what does that mean to have a predator on our campus, and how do we want to respond to that in a quick way. And if I may quickly, one other clarification on the mandatory reporter issue. That is a different mandatory reporting process than the child abuse mandatory reporting. This has to do with Title IX and some responsibilities on campus. But that does not connect with what we frequently talk about as mandatory reporting in terms of mandatory reporting of abuse.
I would take one more question from Chair Reed, and could you hold it until we hear, because we've got a couple of other folks, I think, that can really enlighten some of our university rules and regulations business. Chair Reed.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gallegos, and my great apologies for being late. There's nothing like starting Monday with a scheduling difficulty. You may have covered this already, so the question might be to the committee or to you, Senator Gelser. As I read the bill, it seems like the protocol could be a really useful thing for people as they're deciding how they're going to proceed. And I didn't see anything about dictating how the university would make that protocol available or visible on campus. So I wonder if you could enlighten me as to your conversations about that.
Thank you, Chair Reed, members of the committee. Every committee I've come to in the House has been chaired by the vice chair instead of by the chair.
It's a tradition. It's just for you, Senator Gelser.
It's starting to feel that way. So the bill requires that protocol. So each institution will develop a protocol of how they respond. But it does talk about the manner in which the information must be provided. It has to be plain language. It's on the second page of the bill. But it's when the student reports. So a student has gone, they've reported that they've been the victim of a sexual assault. It does not preclude them from providing
providing this information to every student during new student week or orientation, but this would create, at a minimum, when a student comes and reports to the campus that they've been a victim, this plain language notice that includes all this information, at a minimum, must be provided.
Oh, so what's the downside to saying you will make that part of the new student orientation or every year?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, I would not be opposed to that if you wanted to make that change. What I think is important is that you want it provided immediately at that moment when the student has become the victim of sexual assault. I think you go to campus, you go to your new student week, you think about all these things. You don't go in thinking, I'm going to pay attention to this because I might be a victim of sexual assault. Unfortunately, for 1 in 5 women on a campus, they are, but that the most important time for them to have that is in that moment when they're in crisis. And in that crisis, they're not going to go back to find the papers that they may or may not still have from the orientation.
One last comment then. I understand and certainly don't disagree with that. It just, and perhaps it's my own naivete or ignorance on the issue, but I found myself, as I was reading the bill, trying to imagine that horrible situation and thinking about a person who might be trying to decide what to do before going to any of the places that we've already heard about on campus, and thinking about the implications of what that sort of decision might be. So I think I like the idea of, you know, even though you're right, it may not stick and it may not be relevant at the front end, trying to spread that information even more widely. So,
is it possible to do both?
Certainly, what is in my mind is adding. I wouldn't suggest that we reduce from what's in the bill, but maybe adding that as well.
Yeah. Well, and Chair Reed, members of the committee, I would recommend, if you do decide to amend the bill, we did play with some language around the students who were incorporated at the beginning. It was kind of late in the process, and would enjoy the opportunity to talk with you going back to that facilities question to look at language where it's involving students on the campus.
Thanks.
People are anxious to ask questions, so let's go ahead.
I wanted to ask the senator, that's why I asked the vice chair to go ahead. Thank you for your testimony, for bringing this forth. It takes a lot of bravery, and we appreciate that. I'm a glad sponsor of the bill. We've heard also testimony in this committee about racial issues not being addressed by the university. You mentioned a budget note. I would really like to maybe work with you on that. I just can't believe that the universities don't have people that are being paid to address both of these issues. And we have to put some pressure on those people that are being paid well money to be sure that, you know, they should have been developing a protocol. I cannot believe in today's society that the universities don't have people with this responsibility to address this issue and do a better job than they're doing. And I think people should be held responsible. So a budget note to ask the universities to identify and maybe reorganize or whatever to address these issues. Thank you.
I think Representative Reardon, you had a question.
And I think it fits in very well. Thank you all for being here today. But that was my question. I don't know if you can answer it, but how in the world is it that these schools have not come up with this, some sort of protocol like this on their own? So, Brenda, your situation happened 8 years ago, and
16.
Nothing.
16.
I'm sorry, math thing, and nothing really has changed in that length of time. It's horrendous, and I'm really appalled that we have to wait and have the legislature demand some kind of protocol. I'm just really disappointed in our school leaders.
Chair Reed, Representative Reardon, I think part of the issue doesn't just live on campus. It lives in our communities where we have a culture that still supports rape and blames victims. I mean, even in, I watched the testimony in a hearing that you had on this issue last fall, and one of the institutions talked about how, you know, these issues are very difficult because these people that are accused of sexual assault have been drinking, and maybe the victims have been drinking. And I would make the argument that no matter how much I drink, I never deserve to be raped. And there are a whole lot of people that drink too much, and they don't commit a violent act on another person and rape them. So that is really what that budget note is about, is how do we re-educate people and start to shift this culture where the training, I mean, I think about my own new student week when I went to college. That's been a long time ago. It was 1990. But that was about
what I needed to do to not get raped. And I think that the real answer to ending sexual assault is to tell people, don't rape, not don't get raped. I mean, it's we don't tell people, don't get robbed. We teach people, don't steal things.
Thank you, Senator. I think we're going to take one more question from Representative Hayden, and then I'd like to get the other folks up because I do think they'll add to our
Thank you. Yes, very supportive of the bill, but kind of following up on your comment there was a question. Within the bill, how do we start to kind of give a warning shot or something across the bow to the people that might be inclined to perpetrate one of these acts, you know, like on when you register for school, if you are involved in one of these sexual assaults, abuse, we are going to XYZ, really lay it out that the schools are going to stand behind that, take it seriously, and here's the punishment. You know, this is a serious offense. So I see this bill really being helpful for the victims, but how do we get to that preventative side of it and to where we do it twice? Maybe that could be helpful to say this will be serious, you know, not just in our athletic department, but in every department. And we are going to follow up on this, and these are the penalties. So be warned, take this seriously.
Vice Chair Reed, or Vice Chair Gallegos, Chair Reed, and Representative Hayden, I think that gets to what Elle was saying. The bill doesn't go far enough in that it doesn't, and it doesn't pretend to resolve all the issues. This is part of that budget note issue. It's not so much about having a person or a coordinator to look at the issues, but how, what kind of training and communication do we need to be providing on campuses? How do we get that information out there to students? And that's more work that we need to do. The original version of the bill had some of that language in it, but we looked at the fiscal situation that we are in this session, and we're worried that it might get hung up in the Ways and Means process, and this was the step that we could take. And when we took that out, I was really taken by Emma Calloway of the Oregon Student Association, who said, okay, but when are we going to do this? This is an epidemic on campus. Every session we say there isn't money. When are we going to get there? And that's why we want to work on at least the budget note so that we can start with who should be responsible and how much will it cost. And I was really taken by Emma's words because she's right. How can we afford not to take care of this?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We call Dana and Melinda up, please.
Sorry. Did I just unplug something? I think you're okay.
Water.
Okay.
Much better than some water. So
yeah.
Won't hurt. It'll dry.
Welcome and thank you, and you can start anytime.
Good morning. Hi, everyone. Esteemed members of the committee, good morning. My name is Dana Rungley. I am a doctorate candidate and GTF, a graduate teaching fellow in the Department of Philosophy at the University of Oregon. I'm a proud AFT Oregon member, and my work, my dissertation, as well as my teaching, focuses particularly on the issue of campus sexual violence, as well as sexual violence in our broader communities. So as you've all heard, the evidence is quite clear that women, non-white, queer, and non-normatively abled bodies are subject to disproportionate amounts of sexual violence on campus. This violence is often inflicted by a minority of psychologically normal cisgender male offenders, many of whom will be repeat offenders. I trust the committee is by now familiar with the statistics, so I'm happy to review them upon request. It's difficult to decide what's saddest about what we know regarding campus sexual violence. Its ubiquity, the victim blaming, its relation to fraternity, sorority life, NCAA athletics, state disinvestment, or the failure of many survivors, perpetrators, and bystanders to recognize sex crimes as such. Today, I want to both speak in support of SB 759, as well as make some suggested revisions with thoughts towards its implementation that have been discussed just previously. As written, the bill requires institutions of higher learning in Oregon to provide a, quote, protocol to ensure that students who are victims of sexual assault on the grounds or at the facilities of the university or college receive necessary services and assistance, end quote. The bill further specifies that a student survivor should be provided a written notification detailing legal and disciplinary options, clarification of privacy limitations at university health centers, and off-campus community services for survivors. This is all laudable and necessary, but as others have said before, it does not go far enough. In order to, quote, ensure that students who are victims, end quote, receive the information needs to be provided to all students in a readily accessible manner early in their education careers, regardless of whether they've been assaulted and regardless of whether this assault took place on campus or off. Clery Act boundaries do not encompass all student-involved sexual assaults, as has been previously discussed. The effects of trauma are devastating, and potential survivors and their support networks need to know by habit where to locate resources. Sending targeted messaging to survivors may only re-trigger their experience. This has indeed been my own experience with a number of students who have received very triggering emails asking them to participate in campus surveys regarding their assault. That's just, I can't even imagine what they might feel getting another targeted email. This mechanism also limits resources to survivors who have already come forward to file a report. I also want to note that it's lamentable that the anonymous reporting option was struck from the previous version of this bill, and I would highly encourage you all to put that back in. Additionally, though students should be made aware of the privacy limitations at university health centers, this body should work to expand privacy protections. I understand there are some federal issues here, but we should be encouraging to make those changes. Student survivors regularly come to me, especially in the courses that I teach on sex, gender, and sexuality, seeking support from a trusted member or a trusted mentor. The state, however, has severely limited me in this capacity. Not only has the institution, the University of Oregon, failed to provide sufficient practical training for me, again, it's lamentable that this has been stricken from the bill, adequate training resources. I am also a mandatory reporter. If students cannot confide in their mentors or trust the student fee-subsidized university counseling center, where do we expect them to go? Skyrocketing tuition and fees make university services the only financially available option for many. Finally, this body must also work to support prevention efforts, including comprehensive, sustained, and intersectional sexual ethics curriculum, mandatory for all incoming freshmen. I thank the committee for their time on this important issue, and I look forward to working with legislators, advocates, and educators on this bill's implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Melinda Joy, and I'm originally from Coos Bay, Oregon. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 759, and this is actually my third time coming to testify in regards to campus sexual assault preventions. And I'd like you guys to please pay attention to my story in regards to any questions you might have about how students actually go about trying to get help. While working on my degree shortly before transferring to Portland State University, I was raped, a crime that in itself is unforgivable, but more pressing of an issue was coping with the effects that it had left on me. I had a life and I wasn't about to stop living it, but my facade could only last for so long. A couple months after the assault, I was still waitlisted for a support group in the community and was hoping to get the counseling services on campus once classes had started. However, the first available appointment to simply evaluate what services they could offer me was a month away. After my initial evaluation, the Student Health and Counseling Center explained that I was complicated and that they weren't equipped to handle anything more than a 10 to 12 week transitional depression. The health center is made to deal with things that students commonly deal with, like depression, but not sexual assault. They suggested the WRC. I had classes, I had studying and a midterm to do, I had trauma to cope with, and a life to try to stabilize. Resolved to find help, I made time. I approached the Women's Resource Center with some hesitation. I had not reported my experience yet, and I was cautious of talking with anyone who might escalate my situation. When I asked for resources for survivors, I was pointed towards a wall of unhelpful brochures. And they explained to me that they had what they called an interpersonal violence coordinator, but that position seemed more like an advocate for domestic issues and not what I was looking for. One teacher attempted, in a good faith effort, to give me a trigger warning before a video shown in a conflict resolution class. With this effort, I hoped she might be able to help and explained my situation as clinically and detached as I could. She was only a first year part-time teacher and didn't know much about the resources offered than I did. A few days later, she handed me a card with some numbers on it and advised me to also go to the Women's Resource Center, wishing me luck. I hadn't the heart to tell her that I'd already been there and I had checked. In spring term, with all the stress, I tried getting help from the Disabilities Resource Center, hoping to find someone who I could finally confide in. After spending some time listening to me, they referred me to what PSU calls a care team, or rather, a team of individuals who are supposed to help students in crisis. After a week, I received no contact. I went back to the DRC to check on my situation, and they didn't know. I received a voicemail shortly thereafter expressing concern, but beyond that, the care team never contacted me again. Ultimately, I made no progress. Throughout this entire time, I was unable to find services to help me cope. I'd like to give you a little update on what's going on recently. I was triggered on campus almost a year ago, and recently I resigned from my position at ASPSU as a senator because I wasn't feeling safe in that space. 3 weeks after my resignation this semester, I was contacted by the care team to discuss my recent resignation and to see if there was anything they could do to help me. I can tell you that after meeting with them that I'm still waiting for a call back from SHAC to see whether or not they can see me, since they've already told me no once before. So after a year in public university, and now 2 years, I haven't found the resources or the support to help me cope with the aftermath of being sexually assaulted. Once classes ended, I was able to find the resources and I'm now going through a lapse in services. Throughout the chaos of navigating this process, my life was not on hold. I held it together through determination and the knowledge that I had nowhere else to go without a college degree. Senate Bill 759 provides the steps for real accountability and establishes a minimum expectation of what higher education institutions should provide. The cost of not providing these resources is high. I persevered, but not only through a force of will. The state and the nation is invested in my education through federal grants, and this will help protect that investment, and I encourage you to support it. Providing this accountability is long overdue, so please vote in favor of this, and I really would hope that you put some of those privacy clauses back in. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'd like to go on record as well in terms of testimony. So, Joe Gallegos, House District 30 representative. I just want to share with folks that my mother actually was sexually molested. I learned after she passed. My sister, as a young girl, was sexually molested. My ex-wife, while I was a student, this is early 70s, when I was in graduate school at Portland State, living off campus, she was sexually assaulted. I felt personally guilty because I wasn't there to protect her, which is a strange feeling. We went to the police department to report the crime, and it was interesting. When we talk about culture, and the police were actually insulting of us, reporting the crime, and nothing happened. We reported it, but like I said, nothing happened. My wife now of 30 years she suffers from a debilitating fibromyalgia. I mean, she's housebound from this stuff. The most severe case that doctors have seen, they say. She was sexually assaulted when she was a young girl as well. And people don't appreciate that the trauma is lifelong. Research indicates that women tend to somaticize the trauma, and that means that they take it in, they develop all kinds of feminine diseases and illnesses, chronic illnesses. that continue through life, and we simply need to protect our citizens from this kind of occurrence. So I was very honored and pleased and privileged to really co-sponsor the bill with the senator. And I think that we need to recognize, as some of our presenters have said, this is really about, it's not just about social justice, it's really about empowering women, and it's about protecting our citizens. And I think that's why I think it's an important bill that we all should support. Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to come up and testify?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Chair Gallegos, Vice Chair, Committee for the Record, Bill Clothing, Carpenters and Joiners. Appreciate Senator Gelser bringing this bill forward. I represent a lot of members in Oregon, the whole Northwest, but I put some feelers out a few months ago on this issue. You know, when with our mills closing and stuff, a lot of people had to go back to college. And I didn't know what answers I was going to get back, if any. But, you know, it takes courage for these people to come forward. Not just once, but dozens of times. And I think Representative Reardon's had the correct word, appalled. I was disgusted when I got the answers back I got. But they turn it into the lowest level person in that college. And then they're referred to the next level. It might take weeks, 3 weeks, month, again. These people can only do this so many times. One of my family members was abused like this. I was surprised that there wasn't something in the books like this law is working toward already. I urge you to pass this forward, maybe even strengthen it to the point to where the top person in that college knows within just a day that we got a problem. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments, questions?
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the things also that I think is important to recognize is, you know, I was at the University of Portland, I think it was in the 90s, when a really horrendous murder and rape happened, and they finally caught the individual. But I think that what it made me aware of was that universities are businesses, and as businesses, there's anxiety around reporting these rapes, and so I think we've come at least some distance in terms of the transparency with regard to reporting these kinds of things, but again, we've still got a long way to go, but I think this bill will help us. Your name and...
Good morning, everyone. My name's Catherine Garcia. I'm an Oregon resident now. And I want to tell you a little bit about my story, and this is going to be in regards to questions about what this kind of bill would, what the process would look like once it would pass. I have an experience that happened to me in Washington State, where there are systems in place. I went to the Evergreen State College, and I was drugged one night off campus and assaulted, and... I went to school and work for a week and was in a daze, and finally decided that I needed to talk to someone. I was falling apart, and I was rowing and working and going to school full load. So I went to the Women's Resource Center at my campus, where they did have information for me, where they did provide me with resources, and the told me basically what my rights were, told me what would happen if I did report to the police, told me other options that I had. Thank you very much. And basically let me choose for myself how I would report, because like you said earlier, it is extremely difficult to report. If anyone's had experience, like one of the chairs was saying, the vice chair was saying, that the police are demeaning to you when you do report. So often if you've already had experience, which I had experience with childhood assault and molestation, it is very hard to report. So that knowledge of your resources of what you can do without going to the police is extremely important, because it's a terrifying situation to be in and your life is literally falling apart. So having this provided was invaluable. On campus, I was allowed to have meetings with my faculty to discuss lengthening term work that was due. I got an extension for that because I was suffering through this. And without that extra time, I would have failed those classes. I would have dropped out of college. I would not have a degree right now. I would not be living and working right now. I probably wouldn't be alive. It is that serious. With regards to, and I see this bill as making this an opportunity for Oregonians to be able to have those same rights and to survive these horrible atrocities. With regards to budgeting and where this money's going to come from to provide these people, I think it's, with all due respect, ludicrous. And this is not the issue to be wondering about budgeting on. This is beyond money. This is our society, and these are men and women and everything. All people are being harmed by this, and money will figure that out later. This is too important. Too many people are suffering, and if Washington can do it, we can do it too. Thank you. Thank and you, I will Mr. take questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I do. I'm just, it's such a weighty way to start the week, but it's such a critical and important issue. And I want to thank all of you who have come up and testified. And, you know, I guess one thing that you make me think about, too, is how important it is to, one, recognize that an incident may not define you. And we can think about that intellectually, but emotionally, it's a whole different matter. Extremely difficult to overcome. Other comments, questions, testimony? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Chair, I would suggest perhaps as we go through, finish this session, go through the interim, that we continue to take testimony on this topic. This isn't the first time, obviously, this has been brought up to us. But it does seem that there's some things that I think on our campuses could be contributing to some of these activities or some of these behaviors. And I don't know exactly what that is, but I think it might be helpful just to continue to have a full and robust discussion about the topic. Yeah. And I'll just add one thing that I heard from a constituent actually late yesterday afternoon, who had spent Mom's Day weekend at one of our universities, but came back with some observations that were frankly pretty appalling to her about the menu of activities that were available for the mothers to participate in, i.e. in activities with fellow fraternities and so forth, that were, let's just say, appalling. So my point is that there could be, I don't know what these contributing factors are, but I'm sure the universities are aware of some of these things going on, that again, yes, behaviors that happen, and nobody should have to, no, but there's no excuse for engaging in these kind of behaviors, but I am not prepared to say that the universities are without some responsibility as well, I guess is what I would say. So I'd be more than happy to continue to participate in this topic as we go forward.
Certainly something that's worth considering for the interim. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I would encourage a joint hearing with the Judiciary Committee as well, because we often hear these kinds of issues and these kinds of bills in that committee. And so I think a little cross-pollination on this issue would be good. And I just want to make one other comment, which is I'm so happy that Senator Gelser brought up the, you know, when women get to campus, we're given mace, Mm-hmm. We're told how to conduct ourselves to not be raped. Yeah. And it is just infuriating to me that that's the frame in which our society talks about this crime. And that, you know, I remember the Women's Center handed out rape spray. That's what they called it, rape spray, the first day of classes. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Vice Chair Gallegos, thank you. As I'm sitting here, Ms. Rogney, I may not be pronouncing your name correctly. I read your testimony before I came in today, and I'm interested in the Clery Act and how that may become a part of this bill or something that can impact this bill in the future, because I am concerned about drawing a geographic boundary around an incident that may not serve our students well, and I'd like to have a little bit more conversation about that as we move forward also.
Yes.
Just I keep coming back to this, and that I think the presidents of these institutions need to have it like overall safety of students as like job one of their job description, and I'd like to find out more about how we influence their job description, because it's if the rape is an issue, there are probably other safety issues as well, and so I would expand the interim discussions maybe, but definitely keep tracking it, but expand it. What other issues are there that are affecting the safety of students?
Well, it certainly seems to be.
And I think that starts at the top.
Yeah. It does seem to be a sentiment of this committee, so I'm sure that we'll. Thank you. Nothing else, then we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 7598. Oh, yes. Could we have a business here of a motion to suspend the rule so that Representative Reed can vote on the many issues that we voted on?
I need to make it. So move.
Good enough.
So moved. So how do we do this? Just go through the list?
Yeah.
Okay. Where do we start? We started with Senate Bill 219. Do we need to gavel in again?
No.
Okay.
I vote aye.
We went then to Senate Bill 240.
Okay.
And went then to Senate Bill 686A.
Vote aye.
And finally, that was it. All right, well, thank you for your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, for handling things so smooth. Yeah, right. I apologize for starting the week on a less than ideal foot.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Yep.
So do we plan to, is there amendments to the bill, or we're not ready to move it?
It's only scheduled for public hearing.
Yeah, it's a hearing today.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think we're going to start at 9 o'clock on...
Okay. 8:30. Nice try, though.
All right. Chair adjourned for today.
Thank you.
Chair adjourned for today.
Thank you.